I'm a homeschool graduate. You can tell because I have no social skills. I had no socialization growing up, and so that'll be evident as we go through this. I'm the homeschool dad of 8 children, and coming through that whole homeschool process, I had this interesting situation where I was homeschooled, then I went to traditional college, and then I went to work for the college afterwards, and for several years I was the director of admissions for the college. And so when you're a director of missions, you're a missions counselor, you travel around and you talk to lots and lots of high school students all across the country, at college fairs and high school visits. And just for a minute, imagine this, the first time I was ever in high school is when I went in as a professional, right, to do a visit. And I remember walking in going, they worried about my socialization? I was like, what is going on here? So anyhow, what's interesting is as a college counselor, you're asking, you know, what do you want to do? What do you want to do all the time? Which is a really stupid question. Now, I try never to ask that. If you're a young adult and ask that, you can just smack me upside the head because I should have learned better by now. And you're asking because you want to know what major they want because you want to be able to tell them how good things about your major so you can sell your college, right? And so you get all kinds of really interesting answers. And so I had this one young lady one time, and she said that she wanted to be an archaeologist. Well, that's pretty interesting. That's unusual, right? It's also a graduate program, so I'm thinking we can spin history here and some other stuff. And so I had her fill out the card, and not to be really rude about it, but, you know, when the card came back, her GPA was under what was going to be admissible for my college, and also a little odd for an archaeologist. You know, that's normal, a little more cerebral sometimes. And so so I asked her, I said, "What? Why do you want to be an archaeologist?" And she said, "Well, I don't know. I just really, really like to dig." And that little story is kind of an example of sort of the process that I find a lot of times with young adults and people that help young adults trying to make the transition to what they want to do for the rest of their life. And that just really annoyed me. And so when I moved on and went to work for Unbound, I just really wanted to dedicate a lot of what we did to finding a better way to teaching people to answer those questions. So the only reason I get to stand in front of you is because I have the distinct privilege of being the president and CEO of Unbound, which just means I'm first the chief wringable neck, and secondly, I get the privilege of working with some of the most amazing young adults on the planet. And if you don't believe me, there's some parents and grandparents of those young adults in here, and you can ask them later. But this is just a privilege, an opportunity to work with them. And in the process, this is not an Unbound pitch. Well, it is sort of, but I'm being sneaky about it, and since I'm admitting it, then it's legal. So for Unbound and our post-high school program, our SEND program, we tell our students, if you spend 3 years with us and earn our full certificates, whether or not you earn a college degree, and you can earn 90 credits with us, most students don't, which is a whole interesting side story. If you do 3 years, we guarantee you have full employment at a college level when you graduate or refund all your money. Now, that does two things. It's a very fun marketing pitch. It always keeps us awake at night because we have to make sure that we are training our students because we really can't handle anybody come back with vouchers saying, you said, okay? And so I tell you that because the content I'm about to share with you comes from some of our courses, some of the things that we do. We actually do this on some consulting levels as well. And these are some of the things that we've found to be the most effective pieces to teach young adults to transition in. And it matters to us a lot. Like, it's existential for us that we get this right. So, okay, with that, we're going to talk about the personal triangle, the team triangle, application, and summary here. Now, some of you, and I recognize some faces, were in the session yesterday. We did do a brief summary of the two triangles, and so this is not a repeat. You'll see a few pieces of familiar information at the beginning, and then we're going to go into depth, particularly about how those triangles attach together. So just if you're like, am I wasting my time? Hopefully not, but now you know. All right, also, I'm going to send these clipboards around if you'd like. People often ask for the slides. If you fill these out, we'll send you the slides. If you filled it out earlier in the other session, we'll send you all the slides, so you don't have to do it again. Okay, and last pitch part, I just printed these, so I'm kind of proud of them. I want to send these around as well, and you can pass these out. Sorry, I didn't mean to stop your note-taking. But we are offering a $4,000 SEND scholarship to people who attend HAV. We've never done that before, but we're biased because we live in Virginia. So we're giving you all the best SEND scholarship that we have this year. This is not fine print. This is $4,000 for 1 year of Ascend. This isn't spread over a couple years, or if you re-enroll, this is actually for the event. And yes, we're much cheaper than colleges, so it is a pretty big discount. So, okay, enough about that. Let's get started. All right. I don't know if you know this, but motorcycles are way more infectious than COVID. And so there's a young man in my booth whose name is Caleb Jacks. He is admissions counselor, an absolutely phenomenal human being and a wonderful person. Also happens to be really great friends with my son. And Caleb Jacks got a motorcycle. And when Caleb Jacks got a motorcycle, my son got a motorcycle. And when my son got a motorcycle, like 5 other kids that hang out at our house got a motorcycle. So I was like thinking about getting leather jackets since we were starting a gang. And since I was a father who really cared deeply about the safety of my son and the young man in my life, I thought the thing I ought to do is clearly get a motorcycle and be able to speak wisdom and stuff into them. And so that's what I did. Also, just so you know, if you have a homeschool dad and you make him drive vans for 20 years, two things will happen. I can argue with you pretty convincingly why vans are the coolest four-wheeled vehicles, I don't care what your truck says, on the planet, right? And I bet you I'll haul way more in the back of my van than you've ever thought about hauling in your pickup, except for not you guys, just other people. If you guys hear, you know what I'm talking about. And you'll also buy a motorcycle. So just a quick piece of information here, all right? And why am I talking about motorcycles? Because I'm using motorcycles as an example throughout these triangles, and I just want an excuse to talk about it. So, okay, here we go. So I despise, hate with every part of my being personality tests. Really, really, really strongly dislike them. And I dislike them because my students love them. And the reason my students love them is because they give them really nice excuses for self-fulfilling prophecies about the way they act. Now, does that mean that they're completely useless? No, I'm not really saying that. I just, from my observation, somebody takes a Myers-Briggs and then they use that as an excuse for why they're extroverted, introverted, including all the pathologies that come with that, right? It's not bad to be extroverted, introverted. It's just they use those as a parallel, right? Enneagram's even worse, so we can go on from there. In other words, there's pieces there that might be useful. I just have watched kids take them and say, oh, this gives me an excuse for all these things that I'm doing. And it also sort of locked me into one way of thinking. I think God's bigger than that. I think that you can be all kinds of different things, right? And I think God's gifted you in unique ways, but if you need to adjust, one of the cool things about being human and made in the image of God is you can create new skills, you can learn new skills, you can do new things, right? Maybe not create new skills, you can learn new skills and do new things. And so that's true, but also there is this point where you have to help a young adult figure out what you're going to do next. And if we've already sort of made fun of the whole pick a major and get a career out of that, how do you do that? So we started observing with our students and with the young adults that we worked with that, yeah, there's definitely some patterns where people tend to be gifted in or they enjoy working in, right? So from a personal standpoint, we call that the create, the connect, and the coordinate. Now, just a really quick word here. There's an economist, his name's E.J. Box. I have no idea what kind of economist he is. I don't know anything about him other than the fact that he has this quote. And the quote is, all models are wrong, some models are useful. So listen to that carefully, right? All models are wrong, including this one. Some models are useful, and I hope this one is. It's been useful for us. But I'm not giving you gospel. I'm not giving you gravity, right? I'm giving you a model that we have used that has been useful for us, that has been applicable across a wide range of things. You should evaluate it skeptically. And if it's useful for you, keep the stuff that works and reject the rest, all right? And I'm doing this the same way I would teach this for our classes. We teach this to all of our leadership teams. We teach this in some of our beginning classes. And so this is how we go through it. All right, so I find that most people tend to be really good at one of these things, reasonably good at another one or less good at another one, and not necessarily bad, but the least talented at another of those. So let's go through this. So create people love new ideas. They like to start things. They like to learn lots of new things. If something isn't new, they'll sometimes break old things to create new things, right? They just kind of like that kind of stuff. And if you're a motorcycle rider, who's a create person buys his bike and then immediately like strips it down and rebuilds it, right? Or her bike. Or, you know, he puts a lot of motorcyclists call these farkles. They put all the little customization things on. They put hand grips on the handlebars and he'll put heated grips on and change the seat out and get different tires and things like that. And they probably ride three or four different kinds of bikes. They start with a dual sport and they'll get a race bike and they'll switch to something else, right? They're create people. They like new things. They like trying to take stuff and adapt it. They say, this is really good at this, but it could be better at this. Or in extreme examples, they'll take a little twin-cylinder Ninja, which is a race bike, and they'll turn into a dual-sport bike. I mean, they'll completely refabricate the whole thing, right? That's a kind of create person. And so that's some of their strengths. On the other hand, create people generally are not very organized. They actually don't always communicate very well because they are picturing things in their head that they already understand, so they're living in a reality that only they can see, and they forgot that everybody else isn't there with them. And if that sounds really personal, that's because I live there most of the time. That always connect to other people as well because of that. They're sort of in this different place, right? If a motorcycle rider, this is a person that's fine riding the motorcycle by themselves. They're really interested in what the motorcycle's doing. They're off exploring, seeing new things, that kind of stuff, right? Okay, coordinate people love to organize things. They like order and optimization. They naturally pursue mastery. They get something and they get better and better and better on it. I have a son who is a coordinate type person, And he's better at the things he does than any of the rest of us are, any of the things that we do in our family, right? He gets onto something and he just goes deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and he really masters it. I never can stick around with something that long. You know, I ride motorcycles, but I'm like a fair to middling to bad rider, right? And if my son, this one doesn't ride, but if he rode motorcycles, he would be a motocross rider or he'd be a race bike. I mean, he would go through it so deeply, which is why we never put him on a motorcycle, by the way. Okay, so they naturally pursue mastery. And in this motorcycle example, this is the person that wears all the gear all the time, right? And they know all of the technicalities of the gear. They can give you all the specs for the bike. They pull the bike apart and rebuild it, whether it needs it or not. They know every piece of the bike. They understand how it all works and goes together. And they're very, very good. They take all the rider certification courses, and then they go back and pay for more. And if you know anything about motorcycles, they all ride BMWs. Okay, now, and only motorcycle riders understand that. All right, but coordinate people tend to miss the big picture because of the details, right? They're so fixated on the details that they often lose track of where they are in the grand scheme of things. They get misdirected by the unimportant, and they rarely understand create people. Now, let me back up and say that again. Coordinate people rarely understand create people. And create people rarely understand coordinate people. And it is extremely rare, although there are some exceptions, and I have at least one in my staff, it's extremely rare that these people, these two things line up, right? Create people are often not their second thing is coordinate, or coordinate people, their second thing is create. They're normally on the opposite side of it, which is a really important point for later that understanding this is essential because in my experience in life, create people desperately need coordinate people to get their ideas to take life. And coordinate people desperately need create people so they're working on the right ideas, right? So just file that away. All right, connect people love people. They love to talk. They like to tell stories. They're often the life of the party. If they're motorcycle riders, they ride with a group. They don't care what the group's riding. They'll ride race bikes. They'll ride dual sports. They'll ride BMWs. They'll ride Harleys. They have the leather jacket. The motorcycle for them is a means to connection to other people. They just want to be around other people. They like connecting to other people. They naturally connect to other people, right? They adapt to others really easily. They often subject to peer pressure. They have a hard time finding their own identity, and it's easy for them to be people pleasers because it's instinctive for them to know what people want. And so it's easy for them to adapt to that. Okay, so put that all together. Here's what we teach our students. You know, hey, draw this little thing, put these on the sides, and then put a dot and show where you are. And, you know, generally people aren't on the extremes. And my students almost always say, well, I'm somewhere in the middle. Really? You know, ask your best friend. You know, ask your parents. Ask your brothers and sisters. No, don't do that. But ask kind of where you are. And keep this in mind. If you don't like where you are, you can change, right? This is my dot, right? So I'm naturally a connect person, and I like to create stuff. And I'm really bad at organizing things, right? In fact, the most wondrous part of my professional career was when somebody I was working with says, I really love sorting email. And I was like, I like sorting email about as much as I like poking my eye with a stick, right? And she's like, oh, this would be fantastic. I was like, we want to sort my email? And she's like, yes. And I was like, oh, like everything changed at that point, right? The genesis of Unbound was right there in that moment. She still works for me. She still sorts my email. And so it's like those connections make sense. However, there were times when I had to sort my email. I still have to keep my own budget, right? My own personal budget. You have to have all these skills. But generally, when you're talking about what is it that you want to do, what do you want to excel as a person, having some understanding about which of these things is your natural bend or that you like doing things in, that's way easier than saying, I think I'd like to be an archaeologist because I like to dig, right? I think I'd like to be a career. Like, every career needs create people, needs coordinate people, and needs connect people. And you're going to work in many, many different careers over the course of your lifespan, and I'm addressing everybody in the room, but particularly young adults. And so knowing these kind of base skills is way more important than knowing some specific thing. Now, you'll get more value the more specific you get. The deeper you get into an industry, the deeper you get into a certain field, you know, the more valuable you become there. But that feels likely to get obliterated, probably by AI, no matter what it is, right? And you're going to have to either to adapt to that or adapt to something else. And if all you know is like, I'm really good at X thing that's attached to X company and X degree, it's not going to help you much, right? But if you know, I'm really good at connecting to people, okay, everybody needs people that connect to people. Every company needs those people, right? And same for the rest of those. Okay, so here's the piece that is really important. You don't have all of these pieces, and so what is it that pulls them all together, right? You'll never get to be great at all of these, and so you need to pull them all together, and so you do that through resilience, relationships, and resilience. And so let's talk about those, right? Let's start with resilience and a little bit of kind of commentary here, because not so much in this crowd, but in our culture in general, resilience has been replaced by fragility. Fragility is celebrated and resilience is almost unknown. And this is such a big deal that we literally at Unbound have an entire event, an entire live event. We have 4 live events in the calendar for Ascend. One event is completely dedicated to teaching students about resilience and hope. And so here's what I just want you to kind of understand as you think about this. Strength is good and requires struggle. You want to be strong, it involves work. You want to do something that's worthwhile, it will involve sacrifice, it will involve work. It will occasionally involve pain, it will involve failure, it will involve going back and then going forward. Right? And that's just the nature of the way the world works in a broken world, that you also have hope that transcends the brokenness. So strength is good and requires struggle. Reality exists apart from what you feel. Now, that's maybe not such a big message for you, but it's a transformative, countercultural, extremely offensive, and completely rejected message for our wider culture, right? So you may not like things that you have to do, but you have to do them. And this is true in every career. It's true in every life. I really despise expense reports. And in order for us to honestly run the company, I still have to do expense reports, even though I'm the CEO, right? I really despise trimming at my house. And, you know, the kids do a lot of chores, but that's one that still falls to me, right? I mean, there's always going to be these things that you have to do, even though I like my house and I like what it looks like when it's all trimmed, right? And so you have to do these things. Reality exists apart from what you feel. And so sometimes you have to do things that are against your feelings. And nobody, including you, is perfect. Now, this is an interesting thing, so I want you to pause and I want you to hear this clearly. Good guys and bad guys are never as clear as they are in the movies. That's why you like the movies. I'm not saying it's bad movies, and I'm not a big fan of these gray movies where you can't tell the difference, right? I'm just saying the reason that movies and stories are attractive to people is because often movies and stories portray good and evil in ways that are easy to identify, but in the real world, it's mixed up. You have a sinful, fallen nature, right? And only God is good. Or as I tell my students all the time, you don't get the luxury of fighting orcs. You're always on a rescue mission. You're never on a seek and destroy mission. And so you have to understand that resilience means that everybody that you meet has to be treated as made in the image of God because they are. And if they're opposing you, that might make them what? Your enemy? Well, guess what? You're supposed to love that person. Those orders are really, really, really biblically clear. All right, so that brings us to relationships, the two things that pulls us together in relationships. And here's what I find is that people think relationships are like breathing. You know, you exist in a world, you run into people, you make friends with people, blah, that's the way it is. But relationships are a learned skill. There's a way to break down and understand relationships. All models are wrong. Some models are useful. We teach something with a mnemonic called the very core, which stands for trust, values, and commitment. And so we actually do a whole training on this, so I'll just show you the final slide. But we say trust is exhibited through transparency. Value is exhibited through vision. Commitment is exhibited through communication. Over time plus experiences equals great relationships. In other words, you could use this as a tool to say, you know, what's lacking in this relationship, or what do I need to add in this relationship, or what kind of problems do we have in this relationship? And the point is not to tell you this is the only way to figure out relationships, or this is some sort of secret knowledge. The point is to impress upon you this. You are not going to be really great at connecting, coordinating, and creating. And so you're going to have to form relationships with people that balance out those other sides. And at heart, all the things that you do only matter in the context of relationships. So if you want to be a personal, you know, if you want to be a person who makes an impact in the world, who achieves something, who has a good life, meaning one that you know, are obeying God and doing good things that help society, that's going to be defined primarily by relationships. And so it's worth understanding that. And also relationships are going to help you fill in the gaps of what you don't have. In fact, one of the biggest things we teach all of our teams is that it's always who, not how. Every time you have a challenge, every time you have a problem, so if you're a young person in this room or anybody else, let's talk professionally for a moment. If I could teach you that every time you face a challenge in your professional life, you would ask not how do I figure this out or how do I solve this, but would say, who can help me solve this? Who can help me figure this out? That immediately leads you to a relational solution, right? That means that you're going to have to connect with somebody. You're going to have to learn from somebody. You're going to have to teach somebody. You're going to have to guide somebody. You have to find somebody. You have to connect to somebody. And that in itself is going to transcend whatever problem that you're working on. If you're on a team that consistently does that, that's the difference between a lousy culture and an awesome culture. All right, switching gears here, the team triangle, right? Now, avoid what is going to be your instant temptation, which is to say, well, this just looks like the personal triangle except for teams. Yes and no. And just keep, hold that in the back of your mind as we go through this. So, all right, vision, storytelling, operations. And since I'm working motorcycles in here, we'll talk about a motorcycle company, right? So let's say this is a local dealership that sells motorcycles and repairs motorcycles and maybe does some other stuff with motorcycles, right? Okay, so you got to have a vision wing to a company. You have to have a leader. You have to have people or a person who knows where you're going, who is the chief wringable neck, who accepts responsibility, who can look ahead for icebergs and navigate in different ways and drive the ship forward and know what success looks like. If that sounds obvious, I will tell you, as somebody who has spent a disproportionate amount of my time working in some sort of fashion of small church ministry, that the biggest thing I run into is people that haven't the foggiest idea where they're going, right? They don't really know what success looks like. They don't know how to define what they're doing or where they're going. They don't know what they're trying to get to, and so they're just kind of ping-ponging around trying to figure it out and ultimately always dissatisfied. So a great team has great vision. We exist for this. We're going here. These people are responsible for it, and these are the problems we have to avoid, and look, the landscape is changing, so we have to adjust, right? So good vision people come with the ideas, with the energy. They're good at threat avoidance. They're opportunity seizing, but they have weaknesses. They're almost always over-optimistic because they're looking to where they're going, not where they are right now. They can have some blindness because of that. Anytime you put somebody in charge of something, you have the problem of ego, right? The more you're in charge of something, the more you think you're right all the time. And so humility is a constant danger here, or lack of humility, I should say. And often operational ignorance. Does this sound familiar? Vision people often have a really hard time remembering how the company's actually running, the team's actually running, right? Okay, so let's go to operations. Operations people, they're all about logic, practicality, economy, organization, systemization, stability, risk mitigation. These are the people that know how the systems work. So in our motorcycle shop example, the vision guy who's running a shop, they're probably fabricating motorcycles, right? They're building choppers. They're optimizing dual sport bikes. They're taking Ninjas and turning them into dual sport bikes. They're selling custom motorcycles to their customer. They're pitching a vision of what it looks like. Your operations guy running a motorcycle shop, he's like, we're going to pick Suzukis because they've been selling the same model for 30 years. We're going to have a really good parts inventory because they're all going to be the same parts. And we're going to be able to run that, and we're going to find a way to keep pushing a couple percentages of margin every year because of the new things that are coming in and the way we're going to do this, right? But operations people are famous for red tape, for being non-agile, for missing opportunities. It's easy for them to stagnate, have detail fixation, and become risk adverse. And then on the other side, we have storytelling. And these are people that have the energy, the excitement, the imagination, engagement, new opportunities. They make it rain in business parlance. They bring in the revenue. And these are your sales and marketing people, right? And sales and marketing people also have their problems. They overpromise and oversell because they're enthusiastic about what they do. They often take too much risk, over-optimistic, and they disconnect from reality. So, okay, once again, put yourself there and say, what does this look like? Well, first of all, vision people come from one of these two wings, right? And so generally, vision people come from a storytelling, sales, and marketing background, or they come from an organizational background. That changes the kinds of things that they do. But for me, I come from the storytelling side, and I'm obviously envisioning because I'm in charge of Chief Ringable Neck for Unbound. And once again, operations is not a great strength for me. And so I have to really be careful about the operations people I hire and who work for me, and I have a little extra of them because I don't understand that as well. I can lend a hand with sales and marketing. I understand what's going on there. I don't have as much experience in operations. All right, now, here's the interesting and fun part, at least for me, is connecting this. And this is where we're going to kind of get a little different, and I want to focus in. And this is the kind of skills that I see young people consistently not having. So let's pause here for a second. My argument to you is that just having some sense of what kind of person I am and what part of a team I want to work on is way more valuable to a young person than knowing I want to be a blank fill in a career field, right? I want to do the specific job. Now, there are exceptions. I have a son who's just got accepted to nursing school. And so, you know, to be a nurse, to work in medicine, you have to have some preconception of doing that because there's a long trail that you have to go through. So that's always really important. Engineers, same kind of thing, right? Some hard sciences, some of those things. And those are great fields. And just hear me clearly, I'm not saying, A, that those are bad in any way, shape, or form. And I'm not saying, B, you ought not to go those traditional routes. If there's a chance you're going to build a bridge that me and my family drive across, I want you in a lab somewhere, not doing online college, right? If there's a chance you're going to saw the top of my head off and poke around to get a clot out, I absolutely want you inside a live classroom somewhere, right? But there's other ways to do some of these other things. So there's some specific routes you have to go on. But most people, take out those exceptions, most people are going to have a lot of different careers and a lot of different areas and a lot of different fields. And if you're saying, hey, kid, at 18, you should pick what job you want, what company you want to work for, even what field that you're in, it's not bad, it's just limited. And I'm arguing and say, hey, young person, help me think with you. Are you kind of a connect person or a coordinate person or a create person? And you know, let's get you some jobs. Let's get you working. When you work at those jobs, do you like working on the store, the sales and marketing side of the business? Do you like working in the coordinating part of the business, the operations part of the business? You know, are you kind of moving into leadership? Let me get a sense of that, because if you can understand that and build those skills, what you are building, and this is the key here, what you're building is transferable skills. So when technology comes along and obliterates your company, who takes out your industry, who changes what you're doing, you don't have to go, man, all I ever knew was how to build, you know, film cameras for Kodak, right? The classic example. You can say, actually, I operationally know how assembly lines work and how to build cameras. I know how to sell, you know, expensive pieces of kit to people. I know how to lead teams. Those are transferable. I have a lot of experience in film photography, but I can transfer that. Some of it's going to get lost and transfer that to something else. That's the argument I'm making. And then this next set, in terms of how to hold it all together, this is the part that I see all the time where it's like people personally go, well, I'm trying to learn it all myself. No, you probably just need to have better relational skills so you don't have to learn it all yourself, right? Well, I'm stuck and I don't know where to go. No, you probably need some resilience so you can push through that hard place. That's what all of us need. Well, I always work for bad companies and have bad bosses. Really? Because the way you pull this all together is through having great culture. And the only way that you get great culture is through conflict. So listen to me carefully. In 30-some years now of professional experiences and leadership experiences of various kinds, my experience is that great culture is king. Having great culture in your team will make it more fun to work, you're more effective in every possible way, whether that's a church, a family, a business, whatever else. But culture only comes through conflict. That's the only way you get to culture. And I say that because I would say one of the number one things that I got told every time I put people in leadership teams, every time I work with people, is like, I really don't like culture. I mean, conflict. I really like to avoid conflict. I really don't. I'm not a big deal. Okay, look, honestly, if you love conflict, you're probably a bit of a psychopath. Or you're a really good salesperson. Okay, one of those two things. And I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing. I'm just saying that, yeah, it's somewhat natural. Like, you don't really want somebody to come and say, I love conflict. I, you know, punching people in the nose is what I do best. And insulting people is the second thing I do best, right? Okay, well, you can work for somebody else. There is that, right? But this idea when you come in with this defeatist attitude is I hate conflict. I avoid conflict at all costs. Yeah, well, the costs are really high. The costs to avoiding conflict are really high. The only way you get to good culture is when you disagree with somebody and you figure it out. And all of a sudden you're like, now I trust you. We didn't agree and now we do. And if that doesn't make sense to you, you're probably not married. Okay, so tools to handle conflict in a way that builds culture. Well, somebody's catching up. So first is transparency. Always tell the worst, right? And this is if you're the employee, if you're the family member, if you're the church member and something goes wrong, you know, make sure that you explain as clearly as possible what happened. Whether now, I'm not saying if you did something wrong, we'll talk to that about that in a minute. I'm talking about if something is going wrong, communicating that to everybody else. So for professionals in the room and for young adults, if you're not in this position yet, listen, because this is really important. How many of you have been around when somebody's been fired in your company? Okay. And what did HR, totally aside, I just despise that term. So HR says, oh, so-and-so is no longer with us. What happened? Well, we're not at liberty to discuss things. Well, what happened to them? Well, they're just not compatible with our company anymore. They decided to move on, family reasons, whatever, right? Okay, now, what happens as soon as that goes down? Did you hear so-and-so? They were embezzling from the company. I hear they got arrested. You know, they were cheating on their wife. They were, all this stuff. I mean, like, whenever there's a vacuum, people by their sin nature will go, whatever you're not telling me, I'm imagining things 50 times worse. Well, it was pretty bad. Yeah, but I'm way ahead of you. it was bad, but I've already doubled it in my mind, right? And so, you know, transparency is the prerequisite to honesty in a company, which is a culture that can understand things. Are things going to go wrong in a team? Yes, because it's full of people. They screw things up all the time. That's the nature of being a person, right? Present speakers included. How do you fix that? Well, you have to be transparent and say, this is what happened, went wrong. You know how many times I stood in front of my team and was like, I'd really love to say that we've moved on to a new level of the company. We're going to hand out raises to everybody, and we can double our per diems on the road to the conventions. But we didn't hit targets. And so we're going to have to rethink how we do some of these things. And we didn't hit targets because this happened. And also, that partnership that I said I was going to close, I never got it done. And, you know, we can have a little postmortem about why that happened. But I'm just being really transparent with you. This is where we are. These are our challenges. This is what went wrong. And this is what we need to do to fix it. I can't stress to you how many times when we are asked to do consulting work with somebody, that just a little transparency would have relieved the need to have anybody else come in and help, right? Okay, that goes along with extreme ownership. It's always your responsibility. If you say, that's not fair, did you hear this as a kindergartner? It's still true, right? Life is not fair, and as Christians, we ought to understand that the Son of God got crucified. Why are we surprised when things are not fair? Life is not going to be fair. The Son of God got crucified. What did he do? He accepted responsibility for all of our sins. What does he ask you to be? To be like Christ. What does that imply? You better accept a lot of responsibility, including mistakes of other people. What's the alternative, right? Nobody takes responsibility. Not my job. I wasn't supposed to sweep that up. Not my job. I wasn't supposed to talk to that customer. I wasn't supposed to close that sale. I wasn't supposed to handle that contract, right? That's the alternative. What's the other side? It's always my responsibility. Whatever happens underneath you is your responsibility the whole way down. I jokingly tell people, I'm the chief wringable neck and unbound. If anything goes wrong, it's my fault. If anything went right, probably somebody on my team did it. That's actually really true. I do very little practical work in the sense that I'm out doing the stuff, the day-to-day stuff that makes it go through. I'm doing vision stuff or working on some bigger size of things, right? But if something goes wrong, I can say, well, so-and-so down and whatever didn't do it. Well, why is that? Well, it turns out so-and-so did it because their supervisor didn't tell them to. Why is that? Well, because their supervisor didn't know it. Well, who's their supervisor report to? So whose fault was it? Mine. I didn't tell that person that this thing needed done. I didn't train them well enough to see it. I didn't equip them well enough. I overstressed them because I got too much stuff for them to do. I put too much pressure on them. I didn't communicate well. It's always my fault. And the miserable, frustrating, aggravating thing is, if you break it apart, it is my fault. I mean, like, it almost always can come back up there. It's a lot easier if you just start there, right? So we're talking about what are the skills you need as a young adult to succeed. Let me just tell you, if you would start with committing to transparency and accepting responsibility, you're now in such a select league that almost every peer that you work with won't look like you in a bad way. Now, this is not hard stuff. This is not original stuff. I didn't invent this stuff, and it's not stuff you don't know. I'm just merely elevating it to you and saying, look, I'm giving you a sense if you can do these things, you all of a sudden have significant advantages over the rest of the people that you're working with. And it's not a competition with them, but it does mean it changes your ability to gain responsibility and to make an impact in the world. All right, and then that leads to this. Please disagree. When we build teams, we have a national conference. It's our biggest event that we do. Our role as a staff is to sign the contract with the location that hosts it. That's the last thing we do. Everything else is done by a team of students. And when I say everything else, I mean they create all the content, they hire the speakers, they sign the speaker contracts, they write the speaker contracts, and then we check over them and make sure they work correctly. They hire the shuttles, they set up the locations, they figure out the activities, they write the copy, they design the logos, they run the AV, they run the event. I'm talking about everything, right? And so that team is obviously essential because that's the first event I do for the year. That's the first impression new students get of Unbound. This event has to be as perfect as possible, and it's entirely run by students. So picking those teams becomes really important. And you know, the number one thing we do when we pick those teams is I try to put together a group of students that I'm absolutely 100% positive will disagree with each other vehemently. They will have totally different ideas about how to do things. And the first thing we do is I actually show this slide deck to them, and I set them down and I say, I just want to tell you this very clearly. If you are not disagreeing with each other so badly that you're not sure that you can continue on this team, if you're not at a point where you're just completely at odds with each other, I'm just putting this as plainly as possible, I don't think you're going to give me a very good apex. It's going to be subpar compared to all the ones you've already experienced. you need to come to a place where you don't know how to move forward because you have different ideas, because only then will I truly believe that you were all in and committed to this, and you care enough to have an opinion, and you care enough about that opinion to defend it. Please disagree, but only if you appeal to values and vision. Now, here's the second way you're going to fail. If you disagree and you get personal, not only is that going to be disastrous, but it's absolutely 100% not tolerated here. I'm not talking about personal disagreement. I want you fighting tooth and bloody nail over ideas with people you love. And I don't want you to stop loving them for 1 second. In fact, I want you to love them more and deeper and harder as you disagree vehemently with them about this idea of how we're going to do this. We had a team last year that spent 47 measured hours designing our stupid name tags. I was ready to kill every last one of them, right? They were the coolest name tags we've ever had, and I don't think a single person attended had any idea of why they were so cool, right? But what happened over those name tags is that from there on, every little detail of that conference that year was just so on. And the name tags became the catharsis for one of the most detailed, well-run, deep conferences we've ever put on that I've ever been a part of. But it took 47 hours of just mind-numbing, beat-your-head-against-the-wall disagreements about gradient of color. I'm not a designer. I was like, what are we even talking about, right? That ended up getting us to that place. And that requires communication, which is the beating heart of turning conflict into culture. If there's a problem, my first thought is, how can we communicate this more? How can we make this clear? And I don't mean like talk it to death. I just mean make absolutely certain that every single person on this team knows what's going on and feels like they have a piece of it and they know how to, you know, what's happening, that they have a way to affect that. Google has, you know, more money than the rest of the planet put together. And so several years ago, they wanted to research about why good teams worked. And Charles Duhigg Smarter, Faster, Better. In the book Smarter, Faster, Better, wrote about this. And they said, we put teams of rock stars together. And I think most of us instinctively know that, no, that didn't work. A lot of ego in that. Do we put teams of this together and that together? And it turns out the teams that are most effective, which is every team where they felt, every member of the team felt like they had been heard, even if they disagreed. All right. Now keep that in mind, right? Because a questions-based paradigm means that people don't believe you necessarily if you give them an answer, but they believe you if you ask a question that allows them to arrive at that answer, which requires some communication skills. And it also requires this. I tell this in every consulting thing that we ever do, and I tell this to every single one of our teams, and I remind our own teams about it, although we don't generally have this problem. When you're doing all that, when you're trying to fight over ideas and doing all these things, you know the one cancer that will absolutely destroy it is gossip. Gossip kills and should get you fired. I don't really advocate firing much at all because I feel like that's my responsibility, right? If I brought somebody on, I need to equip them to do really well and to be a better job of hiring better, to not have to fire. But the one thing that I would instantly fire for is somebody who can't figure out how to stop gossiping, right? When we talk about other members of our team, we talk about them in ways that build them up. And if we have a problem with them, then we go to them. So that's the tactical stuff, right? If you have a problem with somebody, we're talking about the right place and the right time. It's not in front of customers. It's not in front of the rest of the staff necessarily. It's keep conversations private, private conversations private. That we're fighting ideas and not people, that we want to fight hard. But at the end, and this is the point that we're kind of building up to, is that we tell our teams, at the end of the day, you're going to agree or leave. You're going to agree and say, yes, I'm fine with the color gradient in this name tag, let's go. Or you're going to say, that's the worst color gradient I've ever seen in a name tag, but I love you all, and I'm now the only person that doesn't like it, and I'm in, and I will never talk about the color gradient on the name tag again, privately or publicly. Now, that sounds like sort of a trite, specific example. I just want to repeat that really clearly. And I say, well, let's tie it back to what we're talking about. I'm talking about the kind of skills that make young adults successful and that make people successful. This isn't just a young adults thing, right? If you're the kind of person that'll fight like crazy for an idea, but then has the ability and the maturity to say, and if I disagree, I have registered my disbelief, my disagreement, and I'm okay with it, and then you're big enough and mature enough to never bring it up again. And this is particularly important if you get to Apex, and this didn't happen, but you get to Apex, everybody's like, those are the ugliest name tags I've ever seen, right? Then if you're the person who disagreed, the frustrating thing is you just have to say, yeah, we'll do better next year, while privately going, I told them, look how their gradient was wrong, right? But you can't say that publicly. You can't even say that publicly. Nobody wants someone privately. You can't have somebody come back and say, I told you. Like, get out of here. I don't want to work with you anymore, right? You have to say, I fought as hard as I could. Whose responsibility is it for the color gradients off the name tags? Mine. I didn't present my ideas better enough, good enough. I didn't have good enough questions to get this change. I accept responsibility for the name tags, even though I argued that they would be different. Does that make sense? That's the kind of skills that, frustratingly to me, nobody talks about. But in the workplace, if you've been there for a little bit, you're like, yeah, that's the stuff that makes it work. That's the stuff to do. That's the stuff that you pay other people to come in and tell them that it should be obvious. If you know this going in, it changes everything, right? And then finally, we tell our students, and we're going to actually do a whole session on this, tomorrow. I can't remember if it's the first one or the second one. At the end, it all comes down to serving people, and you don't have to be flashy about this. You don't have to be big about this. You don't have to, have the biggest idea that changed the company, all this stuff. You just have to build on being extraordinary and ordinary every day, right? You just come in and you do your job as good as you can. You serve your family as well as you can. You serve your church as well as you can. Every single one of you, if you're breathing, have opportunities to do this in your life starting as soon as this thing's over or right now by not falling asleep. To be extraordinary, those ordinary things. And for us, that allows us to come back to our students and say, I want you to be really, really good. I want you to try as hard as you can, but I don't need you to be spectacular. Because that's an anomaly. Some of you will be like, oh, that's a really fantastic idea. Yeah, that's great, but it's going to be the little ideas that weren't fantastic, that little by little that we all committed to be as excellent as possible, that will stack up together so that we all have a fantastic experience. And that's true in every single team, every single mission, everything that you do. Now, final piece as we end this, and we talked about this yesterday, just a reminder here, create, coordinate, and connect people work in every one of these teams. And that's the final piece I want you to leave with as you're thinking about this. If you're a create person who loves new ideas, don't just say, okay, well, I'm a vision person. Well, you're a vision person for an entrepreneurial company. You're also the person that can come in and teach them a new way to build an assembly line if you work in the coordinate part of the business, operations part of business, excuse me. And if you're a create person, you're the person that's creating the video content for the marketing department on the storytelling side. If you're a coordinate person, you're a great CEO for a company that has some things going but needs to improve a couple of lines, who needs to be able to figure out some margin, who needs to optimize their systems. If you're a coordinate person and you're working in operations, you're really good at optimizing the operations of that particular team. And if you're a coordinate person working in sales and marketing, you're the person that figures out if we put this much money into Facebook ads, we get this ROI off of it, and that makes sense, and you're tracing it all through spreadsheets and figuring out how that looks and all those things, right? And then finally, if you're a connect person, you might be a great leader for a company that needs its culture changed. You're a great person to come in and teach somebody how to run a new assembly line. And if you're in, the storytelling side, you're probably the salesperson. You're explaining the product or services that your company does. Now, why do I finish with this? Because I want to come back to this idea that, when we're talking about application here, ultimately this is about having an attitude of mastery so you gain skills and experience. So, final things here, young adults and everybody else in the room. To do this means to start as early as possible exposing yourself to being able to working on teams, whether that's a volunteer situation with your church, whether that's you're sort of reimagining your position in the family, or, and I think this is often the most valuable thing at a certain age, if you're working for somebody else for pay, right? Is that as you do that, this is not about, I wonder what I'd like to do. This is like, go out and do it, and then tell me, you're working at blank place right now. So my children worked at a local farmer's market, and they had a coffee shop there. And so I'd ask them, they work at this coffee shop and this farm market. I'd say, tell me, if you had to master one thing in this business, what is it you would do? And my daughter said, I just really love interacting with customers. Well, that's the connect person who's on the storytelling side of that business, right? And I've had young people come to me and say, well, I just really love making sure that we've got all the right inventory out and everything's arranged the right way. Okay, that's a coordinate person doing some operations type stuff. I really am really fascinated by the fact that we've never done any marketing, and I'm just wondering what would happen if we put some Facebook ads out that did this. Well, that's a create person working on the storytelling side of things, right? Okay, so you can see just little things like that, And the other side of it is like, well, I love working at the coffee shop, but I hated dealing with customers. Okay, well, that's an important thing to know. We should probably get you off the cash register and have you stock some shelves now. Those kinds of things are the valuable stuff. But see, what happens is that we say, are you going to work at Chick-fil-A for the rest of your life? Well, the irony of that is, pretty profitable thing to do, actually. So, I mean, if you're going to be an owner-operator. But the point is, like, no, of course, starting jobs are generally not finishing jobs. Sometimes they are, right? But but if you say, like, well, how, you know, oh, your kid's going to be a barista for the rest of their life? There's some pretty interesting money in coffee, maybe. But no, the point is, no. My child is really good. My young adult is really good at relating to people. And so the job that she moved to after that puts her in contact with all the clients for an extremely successful wealth management firm in our town. And she now is the front-facing part of a company that manages millions and millions of dollars. And every person she talks to is incredibly high worth and high value. And their entire impression of the organization comes to my daughter. And she learned almost all of that by being really nice to an unending parade of people buying coffee from her. So, but my daughter, if you'd ask her when she went to work for the coffee shop, would you like to work for a wealth management firm? Would be like, no, what? I'm not interested in money and finances and all that kind of stuff, but I'm very interested in finding how to relate to people. And I'm very interested in serving all of these people behind me. And if I get this right with the client out here, that makes the meeting back here about their assets and stuff like that go even better. And if I'm the one that has to be on the phone with the insurance company figuring out how to get into the system that somebody forgot their password to, and I can do it in such a way that everybody's happy and everybody works, I'm really good at that. Okay, well, you know what? Every single company on the planet needs somebody who's good at that. And so the longer my daughter stays in the wealth management firm, the more connections and more depth and more skills she gets in that industry, that's really helpful, right? But if she ever decides she wants to leave wealth management, you know, she'll give up some of those things, but then her learning curve in the next job is so much faster because she's transferring all these skills that are universal. That's the kind of skill development that I'm interested in and that I see actually pays off. And when you do that, the earlier you do that, the more skill you build in this, the more experience you get in this. If you were in the session yesterday, it leads to work that you love, right? When you trade experience for skill for work that makes a difference, you train skills for autonomy. When those things combine in a way that pays enough bills, people generally find work that you love. And that's always when people were asking me. When they would say, hey, what do you want to do? They're trying to answer with a major that they think would lead to a job that would help them love what they do because that seems like a good thing in life. I'd say that's not the only way to define life, but we do spend a lot of time and whatever our daily activity is, whether that's being a stay-at-home mom that homeschools or a stay-at-home parent that homeschools or whether that's actually going out and earning the money or however that looks, right? You spend a lot of time doing that and knowing how you do that and the skills you need to do that wherever you need and can do it is what we're talking about here. So, okay, that's the session. We got a few minutes here. We can pause. We'll ask a couple questions. And if you're wondering, I'll get you out of here early, I promise. So, okay, because the room is really hot. All right, so any questions? Yeah, so the question is, how do you apply this to somebody with special needs like a high-functioning autistic child? All right, I want to be really cautious here because I do not have deep expertise like I've personally done this again and again. However, I do have in our high school program called EQUIP a couple of high-functioning autistic children, and we teach this very specific thing. And my experience and the experience of my coaches is when that framework is provided, the students that we've worked with, that kind of looks like a formula that they say, oh, there's a step-by-step thing here, and then things that I did not intuitively understand make sense to me when I break it down smaller pieces. Now, this is a very narrow experience window I'm talking about here, right? So whether that's universal to that kind of thing or not, I have no idea. I have had some limited success with that, but I will not stand up here and tell you, oh, I've done this with 50 people or something like that. So that seems like it makes sense with sort of my narrow experience. Whether that actually does or not, you should answer more. And, you know, come by the booth and we can talk more specifically. But great question. I just want to be honest with what I do and don't know with that. So, all right. Anybody else? Lots of people, no questions. They're out of here. So. Okay. If not, let me wrap this up then. Okay. I want to finish with this last piece. I want you to understand that when you come to a convention like this, there's hundreds of people here, hundreds of speakers. They all have all kinds of ideas, and all of them have some good merits to them at some level. At least I hope this one did, right? Okay, and so I want you to glean from that. That's fine. But I also want to tell you that, you know, if you leave here and do one or two things in the conference, I tell students when they leave our events, if you do pick two things that you do differently based on what you learned here, that's a pretty big trajectory change, right? And so I don't want you to go home and say, we are going to enact the team and personal triangle and do all this kind of stuff. If that works, great. My guess is it doesn't. I don't think it works that way for any of my students. Look, at our house, we don't sit around our dinner table and I say, now, Ashley, were you using the personal triangle today or the team triangle, right? That they would roll their eyes, which they're really good at, and be like, I've been to your sessions before. Let's talk about something else, right? Okay, so, and I'm not suggesting you do anything like that. Instead, what I'm suggesting is that I want to sort of, I put all this detail in because, yeah, we do teach this model. And yes, it makes a difference in the way we run our teams. And it has been really helpful. And we've had good feedback from it. We teach in our courses. Yes, certainly, right? But practically, does this mean people go around this? No. I think practically what happens is that young adults go, I don't have to know what I have to do with the rest of my life. I don't have to have everything figured out. And parents, you don't have to have everything figured out, which is both an impossible, stupid idea that you would have that, right? And if you do, that's fantastic. I've just never been there. I have no idea what that looks like, right? Instead, all I want you to do is to deliberately stop and think, okay, on a broad macro sense here, let's just ask some questions about what would guide us the best way, right? Let me just ask some broad questions. Who do you like to work with? What do you like to do? What kind of a team does that look like? And how can we get you more and more experience in that so you can double down and build more skill in that area? You can decide, I really don't like that. And in the process, you're going to meet people. You're going to get to do things. You're going to experience stuff. You're going to have some failures. You're going to have some successes. You're going to have some fun. You're going to be miserable. And it's going to be great because that's what we get to do, right? That's called living. And how horrible would it be if you went through and everything you touch turned to gold? I know some people who everything they turned to gold until they're about their 30s, and then it turned to lead, and it broke them, right? So get out there as early as possible and say, yeah, were you spectacular failure at that? I mean, there's some things you don't want to be a spectacular failure at, you know, skydiving. But for most things out there, like, you were a spectacular failure at being a barista. Well, that was not going to be your final thing anyhow, right? And so let's get out there and get those things. And if you take that stress out of having to know everything and figure everything out and say, let me give you some ways to build some practical skills that'll be transferable no matter what you do, son or daughter. If you end up going to nursing school and being a medical doctor, you're going to be the kind of medical doctor that's really good at connecting with your parents, really good at operating them but not talking to them. Those are called surgeons. And really good at figuring out how to run a hospital. And we need some people who can figure out how to run hospitals better, right? Okay, so even in that, it's going to apply. And in the meantime, enjoy it. All right, we will finish up here.